home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos in Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is no secret that I have been calling Kaepernick from Radio Row. I am gathering many of my Radio Row friends this week, next week, in anticipation of the magic moment that the Ravens will have a third Super Bowl parade here. So far, so good. But we are taking our Radio Row to Crab Cake Row. It is a cup of soup or bowl. That's the question we're going to ask you. Do you want a cup of soup or a bowl of soup? And it's all free as long as you're giving to the Maryland Food Bank. We'll be beginning on February 5th, live from 9 until 5. We're going to start things downtown at the world-famous Lexington Market at Fadley's. Tuesday will be Acostas in my side of town in Dundalk. Wednesday, we move to Lauraville in beautiful Coco's Pub. That's going to be a great one. Then Thursday, State Fair in Catonsville. Friday, hopefully Super Bowl Friday, we will have a cup of Super Bowl at Pappas's restaurant where they have delicious crab cakes. That's Oprah's crab cake place. I don't know where Peter King's crab cake place is. I'm probably going to have to bring him in here and take him to each and every one of these. So he has a crab cake place. Well, do it. Let's go, you know?
I wish you would. Hey, man, I love crab cakes. They're like my all-time favorite. I don't really have a favorite because – listen, anytime I've gone to dinner in Baltimore over the years, I always look at the menu and usually I get some sort of green thing before the meal, you know, some sort of salad. But if there's a crab cake on the menu, I said, just bring me a big one of those. So that's what I usually do. They've all been good.
Every single one of them's different. This is why I did a crab cake tour, Peter. Every single one's different. They're all made with a grandmom's recipe. And Peter King, if you are on my airwaves, and I'm celebrating 25 years of just the radio, 32 years of being on, and I'm doing this countdown with our friends at Curio and Foreign Daughter, counting down our stories of glory, they all involve some big moment. And, you know, we've had this Super Bowl march in New Orleans. We threw this big party in Tampa. And, you know, I had to free the birds with Peter. I mean, I've done these crazy things. One thing we've never done in this city is host an AFC championship game in the modern era. Since 1971. I've been to probably a dozen championship games, AFC, NFC, ours, others, losing. I've gotten on buses in Foxborough after Billy Cundiff, Pittsburgh. We lost the game. Palomalu picked off Flacco in his rookie year. So I know the awful side of all this, but in my own city, I can't imagine what's going to take place in downtown Baltimore on Sunday night if this team goes to the Super Bowl. I've never seen anything like it, man.
The cool thing to me is that the last time Baltimore was the host team for an AFC championship game is for the first AFC championship game, 53 years ago. And, you know, I was looking it up over the weekend after I didn't even know that that was the case until after the game when someone, I forget, in the Ravens locker room mentioned it. I said, wow. And I went back, sure enough. But the coolest thing of all, I mean, I think this is so much fun, is that there's a University of Louisville quarterback who threw a touchdown pass in that game 53 years ago. And there will be a University of Louisville quarterback who throws a touchdown pass, everyone hopes, this week at the game. And it's just very interesting to see the connection. And really, and what it says, honestly, about the sport of football. You know, Johnny Unitas was an absolutely classic pocket quarterback through a beautiful spiral. Incredibly smart guy, always wanted to call his own plays. And Lamar Jackson is a 2020s NFL quarterback. You better be able to move. But Nestor, you know, one of the things that really impressed me about what happened in the victory over Houston is that, you know, it was Lamar Jackson who said to T. Martin and I believe others at halftime, hey, listen, we've got to get out of this, you know, these deep balls. We've just got to move the chains. We got to call a few more runs. And in the second half, in the first half, his average time to throw was 3.5 seconds. In the second half, it was 2.7 seconds. Never got sacked. And that's Lamar kind of taking ownership, taking stuff into his own hands and saying, hey, let's do it. It was almost like, it reminded me anyway of, like, as we talk about it, a Unitas moment. What would Johnny Unitas have said to, let's say, Shula or Don McCaffrey or whoever if something wasn't working? Hey, we're not doing this anymore. We got to fix it. So I like how Lamar kind of took ownership against Houston and really helped turn the tide of this game.
You've written these Hoosier stories of the halftime speech, and I mean, the halftime adjustment's legitimate, but the halftime speech with the oranges in your mouth that we remember from high school that rah-rahs everyone and they make commercials about, I've never known that to be like a real thing for the most part, other than sort of lore of what sports writers would come up with or somebody would come out with. In this case, I felt like it was very legitimate. Everybody talked about it. Again, after 38 years, Peter, I'm not a reporter anymore. I'm not there, right? So this would have been the first thing I would have heard that Lamar gave a speech. The first thing I would have been doing is in the corner with the guard or somebody I know on the team and say, what did he say? What the hell happened in here at halftime? Yeah. And I think as a reporter, there's a story there that probably leads Purple Rain 3 if they win this thing a couple weeks from now. Because, Peter, they could have been losing 13-10 if the kid doesn't kick the field goal straight. And then the other part of this is me watching it on TV in my home now. From everywhere they went at halftime, it was a 15-minute referendum on Lamar's postseason careers. 15 solid minutes from Scott Van Pelt and Ryan all the way through to Buck. And everybody was piled on to, holy ish, it's 10-10, they might lose. Here we go. And Lamar didn't feel that way in the locker room. They had an adjustment. There's a story here, right?
Well, I mean, I kind of feel the way you feel about halftime speeches. It isn't that I'm against them, because obviously it happens a lot. But I think the only reason I'm against them is that, and again, I am going to say something now that you are going to say, that you're going to be surprised to hear me say, because it's a little bit critical of the media. Nestor, it's an easy story. What changed that game to me is the way that Todd Monken started changing how he called the plays. And I'm sure that if you're Todd Monken going into that game, you say, hey, we're playing the 23rd rated defense in the NFL. They don't have a great pass rush. So we are going to take advantage of that. And we have speed, finally, for Lamar. It isn't just Hollywood Brown being the sole guy. It's Zay Flowers. It's Odell. It's Rashad Bateman. He has legitimate speed at receiver now. So we're going to take advantage of that, and we're going to throttle these guys throwing downfield. Well, at halftime, he changed smartly, and Lamar was a part of that process. That's what I think is a big story. And I'm not saying it's hard for me to get into the head of guys like Zeitler and, you know, whatever, Isaiah Likely or whoever, to say, well, boy, Lamar went bat crap at halftime. So, okay, now we're going to play harder and we're going to do this. I believe it's more about exactly what you do at halftime, not what you say at halftime.
Peter King is here. It is late January. That must mean good things for the Baltimore Ravens. You can read Peter's work, everywhere, out on Twitter, the original Monday morning quarterback. I miss you on TV from time to time, but it's nice to catch up with you a couple times a year if we do this. So this story with the Ravens, and I've had Aaron Schatz on and the DVOA and all the rankings and how they rank up against other teams. It's a pretty interesting team from a balance standpoint. Defensively, it's an incredibly interesting team from how it was structured, where Eric DaCosta goes out at the trading deadline and trades for a middle linebacker and gives him a king's ransom. This time last year, their quarterback's hurt, didn't show up at their playoff game, pissing back and forth over $250 million, only a quarter of $1 billion there going back and forth. No other team wanted him. They dangled him out for some draft picks and, give us your quarterback and maybe we can't match the offer. Maybe they were always going to match the offer. That's for Eric DaCosta to answer. But boy, has the narrative changed here in 12 months in a massive way for John Harbaugh, for his legacy, for all of it, for a whole bunch of guys that this isn't together for a long time because all these coordinators are getting gigs and a lot of guys like Patrick Queen, a lot of these players are going to disappear. This is a one-time act. They better cash in this week, man. They really better win.
Well, and Nestor, you know, you brought up two things that I think really are important when you talk about the Ravens. One is that, think about this. Think about, I remember specifically at the league meetings in Phoenix last spring, I polled a lot of people around the NFL, you know, very off the record. Here's what I would say. I'd say, you know, off the record, I just want to know. I don't want to assume anything. Off the record, do you have any interest in Lamar Jackson? You know, in making him a contract offer and basically probably trading. I'd say, I think it'd end up, it would have been a one and a two, might have ended up being two ones. But do you have any interest? And I could not find one team that had legitimate interest. There were a couple that I believe had investigated it, looked into it. And this doesn't have to do with Lamar Jackson's ability. It has to do with Lamar Jackson's availability. He missed over the previous 2 years in 21 and 22, a total of 34% of the Ravens' offensive snaps because of injury. Now, I would personally, I would not have paid him a fully guaranteed contract. It'd be one thing if, you know, if he were Marcus Semien and a guy who played every game and never, even in the ninth inning of a 17-2 game, ever wanted to come out of the game. So, and Lamar wasn't like that. It wasn't like he wanted to get hurt. He just simply was hurt 2 years in a row. So to me, I would have never done that. However, the other aspect of the story is that teams just basically kind of dismissed it. And now you look at it and you say, okay, so I was in Buffalo for the Kansas City Buffalo game. And I spent some time with Andy Reid after the game. Andy Reid loves Lamar Jackson, loves him. Mahomes really, really likes Lamar Jackson. And I think one of the reasons they like Lamar Jackson is that he leads in his own way. And as sort of a byproduct of that, his teammates love him, and the only thing that matters is winning. He could give two craps about his stats, because when I was writing about why I picked him for MVP, and I said, I don't care about stats, and I had a bunch of email to say, what do you mean you don't care about stats? You always write about stats. You write about this. My whole point was, in this particular case, if you watch the Baltimore Ravens play football, you see, excuse me, you see a guy who every game controls the game. And I just simply don't care if he throws for 58 yards or 358 yards. Controls the game, controls the line of scrimmage, and he makes everybody on defense a little nervous. Is he going to run? Is he going to pass? And notice, very, very rarely does anybody get a big hit on him. So, hey, I think the guy's done a great job.
What was obviously in the beginning different, it was like bumper car offense, trying to figure this out, trying to get Greg Roman to figure out what to do with him, trying to get the right personnel to do the things they wanted to do, because he sort of inherited this mauling offensive line with Orlando Brown and Marshall Yanda going to the Hall of really good, and like all that was happening for them in 2018 and 19. But the wide receivers weren't right. The defense certainly wasn't what they were. And his maturation and somebody saying, we're going to put you in the pocket and make you stay there, it never felt like they were going to be able to coach him up to be able to pat the ball, move around, and not do the instinctive thing, which is the sticks are right there and I know I can get there and that's all we need to do. And they did that all day in 2019 until they had the passing come from behind. This notion that he's looked like Ben Roethlisberger the last 8-10 weeks, patting the ball, moving sideways, and finding Zay Flowers, that feels to me to be lethal. And the whole thing about quarterbacks like that he stopped and people are afraid to hit him. We've seen guys now fake the slide, quarterback faking a slide. I mean, that's something I hadn't thought about Lamar doing, but my God, that would be against the rules, kind of, sort of, to have him do that. But he is much more well-rounded. And this is really because, to your point, Todd Monken has made him that, and they've made him believe he needs to be that to not get smeared in November.
Yeah, I like the way Todd Monken is calling this offense right now, because he understands the key to success with this quarterback is a diverse play sheet. And that's how he calls the game. I mean, the other day, I would not have predicted at the end of the game that I would have looked down and seen that Lamar ran for 100 yards, but he ran for exactly 100 yards. Not that I didn't think he was effective in running the ball, but I don't know. I probably would have said, 70, 75, but very seamlessly and effortlessly almost, he rushed for 100 yards. And I just think that Todd Monken has it in his head right now, just keep throwing changeups at a defense. And by the end of the game, they're going to look around. Like, I think Houston looked around and said, how did that happen? We were in a 10-10 game at the half, and we had Lamar on the ropes. And in the second half, it's 24-0, and it's like we didn't even show up. I'm impressed with how he keeps a defense on edge.
Last thing for you, because we do have to go. Mahomes coming into Baltimore. The only thing he hasn't done is win on the road. And I saw the sort of piss and vinegar in him and Buffalo down on the field. Like, they said we couldn't win on the road. And everything they've ever told Patrick Mahomes that he can't do, he's done. This would be one, right, coming into this hellhole here on Sunday against the hot team and the quarterback and the well-rounded and the DVOA and all of that, and win. And that would say something about the Kansas City Chiefs, and I know they're capable.
You know, I just believe with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes that playing on the road just doesn't matter. The best team is going to win Sunday, and I don't believe that, as much as everybody in Baltimore, I'm sure, says, oh, man, we're going to make like life hell for Kansas City when they come in this week. I don't think you do that to Patrick Mahomes. You've got to be really, really solid fundamentally. You probably got to beat up Travis Kelce a little bit. And you know, you've just got to be extremely disciplined in what you do. If I sort of look at this game, I look at a lot of the people who Eric DaCosta has collected. You know, and I think a great example is Jadeveon Clowney. You know, nobody has wanted him for years, and yet he goes into a place and he has 8 or 10 sacks and makes some impact plays. And you look at guys like that who DaCosta has gathered, they might be 1 year players, who knows? But those are the guys, I'm telling you, those are the guys who are going to make the difference in this game, I believe, because the Ravens have done an excellent, excellent job in making sure that they care who the 46th guy on the roster is. I'm not so sure they've done exactly the same kind of job in a place like Buffalo. They're very concerned with the top end of the roster, and they might say they're concerned with the end of the roster, but that's where I think DaCosta has really done a good job. He has built a solid roster, and he cares who the 48th, 49th, 50th players on the roster are. Those are the guys who are likely to make a huge impact in the championship game.
Really a revolutionary thing for 50 years of you covering the sport if Lamar wins a championship and they win with this style, right? It is different than Mahomes or other teams winning. This is a different brand of football than we've seen win a championship.
Very. And, you know, the other part of it that I like is I like quarterbacks who are who they are. And after the game the other day, I said to Lamar, I spent 5 minutes with him maybe, and I said to him, you know what I remember about the last time you won the MVP? And you could tell he was thinking, what? What do you? I said, I remember you were in Miami And, you know, that's your part of the world. And he goes, wait a minute, I'm from Broward. I'm not a Miami guy. But I said, okay, but you're a South Florida guy and you're basically home. And I'm not saying you were miserable, but you were really unhappy. And he goes, I was. I don't care about the MVP. I care about winning. And he went through a whole thing, a whole reason about what that year taught him. And what that year taught him is, listen, if you're right there on the doorstep and you don't win, you're going to regret it forever. And I think that's one of the things that's really driving Lamar this year.
Because he'd already have one, then he could get two, and then he could have all this. Peter King has been doing it forever and ever and ever. Where do you want me to tell people to find you? What's the best way? Just add on Twitter. But you still write your column. I still get up on Monday morning and read it. You're in a lot of different places these days.
Just go to NBCSports.com every Monday and look for Football Morning in America. You'll find me.
All right. Well, I'm glad I found you, as always. I hope I find you over a crab cake or you two in the sphere or in the winner's circle at the parade in 2 weeks here before Valentine's Day. I owe you two crab cakes, Peter King. We love Peter King. Go find him out on the interwebs. And you can find me doing Crab Cake Row 2 weeks from now. All the information up at BaltimorePositive.com.